Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, welcome to Playboys Extra. The Dean joined Hello by there. PJ and Playboy Alex.
Yeah.
Hi.
Guys, which play are we in? PJ, which play are we reviewing today?
We're reviewing Historia de una Escalera, also known as Kaida no Monogatari. That is the Spanish and Japanese for The Story of a Staircase by Antonio Buero Vallejo.
I like that you give two names that no one will really understand.
History of a Staircase.
Story of a Staircase. Well, Story of a Stairway. Like, it has so many names in English.
Yeah.
You know what? It's actually kind of impossible to find. Literally impossible to find that I was not even able to read it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That's the end of the review, guys. No, it's not the end of the review. Stop right there. Halt, I say. For Alex, tis the most important member of the group here and the clan, because Alex and I saw this play being produced. Bit of background story, guys. I love this play. I grew up in Spain, and I just found it in the library. Loved it. And then a few years later, when I met Alex in Japan, and it was our thing really to see plays, I said, I was looking out, and then I saw, oh my God, Kaida no Monogatari. That means The Story of a Staircase. It can't possibly, oh yes, but then it was. It was this Spanish play being produced in Tokyo by very young actors, very experimental kind of troupe. And it was a great experience. Really loved the production. So that's why I said again, okay, guys, let's review it now all together, three of us. Mm-hmm. But Alex unfortunately couldn't find a copy.
We could all get it in English. Yeah. So
somehow an English copy does not exist, nor an English production, and
nor even a production with subtitles.
Summaries longer than three sentences. So I feel very bad for like having to leave. Basically, I can't really add much, but I do have to say it is a very enjoyable experience. Just a very quick summary of my thoughts. Like I felt when I saw the production, like it is a very Spanish like way of that these Japanese people were portraying the characters, which was really cool to see. I really had a wonderful time watching it. This was one of the few that PJ and I got to see while we were in Japan, and we almost didn't see it because we were running late and deciding like
that sounds like PJ
want to pay. Do we really want to pay that much for this show? And we
it was more expensive in the end. Yeah,
it was definitely.
Yeah, more that's right. I was literally running from metro station to metro station. I think you were there more or less in time. That was really late.
Yeah,
and it was three times more expensive than it was shown on the internet. And then we just went for it anyway, and it was a most amazing production. And you're right, it was really Hispanic. I found the acting and the play itself was so well done.
The set looks just like what you would see in any other performance. It was really, really cool. And
so Alex, that's something that I wanted to ask you while we have you just for these few minutes, is about the set. Because when I'm reading this play, I'm picturing that the set is essentially just a metal staircase and people walking up and down. Or how elaborate was it?
It wasn't too elaborate. Not as elaborate as some of the ones I've seen in the States, for example, but you had three doors up a level and a staircase that came down, of course. And then I think there were just a couple, like maybe like a bench down there as well. And you could kind of run around the staircase as if it were like a spiral staircase or something. It was pretty basic, but
yeah, that's kind of how that's how I felt it would be. Yeah.
It was still dominant. I do have a picture. They weren't happy of me taking a quick photo.
They were
of it.
Not.
They were not happy. So I'm not sure if I can share it with everyone, but I can. I'd like to show you it, Alex, because in my memory, it was still very dominantly a staircase. Literally, the staircase is very dominant. Like Dublin is very dominant.
Yeah.
It's really what it's about. And I think compared to the play, I have to say, it was a bit more liberal about the outside of the staircase, as if like there were some pavilion, some things around the staircase. That's not in the play, though. I just want to say, Alex,
that's not
in the play. Literally just inside the staircase. So,
but it
gives
something for the actors to connect themselves to when they're talking to someone on stage. If you just have a staircase, where does the other actor stand other than just in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, yeah.
So you gotta have some corners. You gotta block your corners, basically.
It was cleverly done. It was kind of like Vallejo didn't think it through properly, technically, and then other people just sorted out a bit how to do it a bit more natural, because the other actors could just kind of rest Dean outside the staircase, kind of you know, whatever cleaning some of them were and dusting away and stuff like that.
That's fair.
Lovely.
Right. Well, shall we get stuck in, Alex? Shall we kick you off?
Yeah, I have some other Books Boys stuff to look into, as in finding some old videos for you guys.
Yes, thanks. And you should be joining us for a very special treat.
We finally start our Greek stuff just in a week's time. So we're going to...
Well, a week for us. For you, maybe later.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. Miscellaneous period of time for you.
Exactly.
to be determined.
Tis an atemporal issue, guys. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Later, what does it matter now?
I look forward to hearing your thoughts when the episode comes out.
All right, sir.
Yeah, thanks for
joining
us.
Have a Hispanic day. He's gone.
I was going to say Happy Merry Christmas, but I think it's done. It's beyond it, guys. Get over it. Christmas is not coming for another 11 months. You can start singing in 2 months' time. So, Historia de una Escalera.
Antonio Güero Vallejo. Yeah.
Guys, let's get to it. And you've reviewed this. You reviewed The Foundation, the really long, like a few hundred pages long.
The Foundation, I did it with Mireia. It was very long. No, I'm going to just caveat this. I liked this play, but I don't think it has a patch on The Foundation. The Foundation has massive twists in it that you don't see coming. This play doesn't. This is the more straightforward play. Right. So, although I really liked it, I just don't think it's as good just for that one reason, you know?
Well, I mean, let's get to it. I mean, you know, in the Spanish edition, sorry, guys, there seems to be only Spanish edition at the moment, but we're hoping to get this a popular play by producing an episode. You know, it starts off with kind of a quote, by the way, when it mentions
the Lope de Vega
quote. If your edition has it. Yes, the Lope de Vega quote. Is it? Or no, it's a Miqueas quote. It won the Lope de Vega
prize. I'm misreading. It won the Lope de Vega prize, but the quote is by Miqueas. You're right.
Yes. So it's like because the quote is something like this: the son dishonors his father, the daughter goes up against her mother, the daughter-in-law against the mother-in-law, and the enemies of the man are in his own home.
Nice.
So I find that quote very relevant for me, guys, because
that's the whole play.
It sets the scene for the play, guys. It's a domestic tension.
Would you believe that this is the first time I've read that? I skipped it.
Right, okay, yeah. No, to be honest, I don't think I read it the first time I read it. Just this time, I particularly struck out to me, and I just remember it throughout the play because I thought, right, this is a very Hobbes kind of view of humanity, which I get back to because the ending, there's something about the ending I want to mention in contrast to this beginning. But it starts off like that very heavy kind of, all right, this is going to be, you get a feeling that this is what it's going to be about, domestic issues, domestic violence even. But anyway, let's just start with a setting. It is set in a staircase, right? There are actually four rooms. They're 1, 2, 3, 4 Roman numbers. And that's really important. Did you find, Dean, before we start the story, did you find that confusing at all, ever trying to remember which characters lived in which room?
Honestly, I didn't really try.
Okay.
They just appear, they talk. It didn't seem to matter to me which room they came out of. Maybe I missed something because of that, but...
No worries, because having read it twice and seen it once in Japan, I must say that's the one thing that I found annoying. Seeing it was easy. Reading it, I was constantly having to go back because I did want to know. I thought it's quite important, actually, because it changes sometimes in as time goes by where people live and what room and different relationships. I just find that's the one thing I have was the play to start off with that I find a bit confusing. But so, you want to start anyway, Dean. What's the plot?
Well, I just want to, yes, the overall thing is we are looking at human lives, but sort of depressing human lives. And this is quite, it is quite Spanish. You know, I've seen even retro style Spanish movies with a similar type of vibe. It's just, this kind it of post-war weird. Spanish vibe that they just have. But they're living in this shabby old apartment building with, as you say, these kind of four rooms. And
to be very specific, though, post Spanish Civil War, they were never really in the Second World War.
Of course.
No, but it's very important because the Spanish, they have a very particular aesthetic after the Civil War, which is very kind of extremely negative, to be honest. And then Franco comes along, so there's very kind of much, just like lower class talking about this real struggles that they can't exit at all or can't progress at all. So that's the kind of view at the time.
And it's these poor people essentially struggling to get by and pay their, you know, bills and things and get food on the table. But it's also about the relationships between them and also just that they can't really escape. They're just kind of stuck in this kind of grimy, same old world doing the same thing day in, day out for 40 years, you know, and it's depressing.
And to, you know, to look back at Ibsen in our previous plays or Strindberg, it's got that naturalistic idea of just one setting. But instead of it being a room, it's literally just a staircase. So people exit their homes and whatever happens in the staircase is being told. So it's literally the story of what happens in the staircase.
Yes, and people just come out and we get essentially snippets of their life over the duration of their life, essentially. So it's a three-act play, and there's 10-year time jumps between the first and second act, and then a 20-year jump between the second and third act.
Yeah.
Dramatis personae, I don't know if we necessarily need to do it in much depth, because we'll just pick out the people as we come along, but...
I think it's, in this play, you understand why when you read it, it's better to actually talk about as we go. It's got an intense dramatis personae. That's what I find confusing, I have to say. That is, to understand who is everyone, you kind of have to read it as you go along.
I think so, yeah. I've never done this before, but I don't feel the need to list the characters right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so opening act, we open with just a bit of a description of the, which we've kind of already covered, of, you know, what the place looks like. And there's a cobrador, so there's a collector, and he only appears in this one kind of scene, but he's going around trying to collect money for the lighting bills. And,
he essentially just acts as, a troop to bring the characters out from the rooms. That's it. He doesn't have any other thing. So he has to just... everyone has to pay the light electricity bill, so they all come out bit by bit, and we establish immediately who they are.
Yeah, so his storyline purpose is collecting the money, but his real purpose for us is that he's letting us meet the characters one by one by knocking on their door and bringing them out of the room, essentially. It's a good plot device, actually.
Yeah.
So, the first person we have is Paca, we have also Elvira, and Doña Asuncion. She only appears, I think, in Act 1, but she can't afford to pay her bill. And a friendly chap called Don Manuel, the father of Elvira, actually pays it for her. Now, some people kind of mince their words a little bit with her later, but I think that, she was being very genuine. She couldn't afford to pay the bill. The guy says, you're always doing this. And Don Manuel pays it because I think he's a very nice, honorable gentleman. And, he makes his daughter Elvira proud. But later there's a comment where it's kind of like, she could have paid the bill, but she's kind of like, oh, hi, Don Manuel. She's almost flirting. Like, and she's like, oh, your daughter's so pretty.
Yeah,
oh, by the way, I can't pay my bill. You know, I don't think that was the intention.
Doña Asuncion is a widow, and she's got a child, a grown-up child now called Fernando, who's a good looker. And, yes, she's basically asking Don Manuel and her and his daughter, Elvira, basically not kind of asking for the money, but just kind of saying it's very difficult, kind of, yeah.
Indirectly, see, I don't think maybe she asks. Yeah, I think that she is just kind to them, and then they offer to help her because their kids like each other, you know? But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she was a bit more pointed.
Could be. No, I think it's more on the gender side. And the other two neighbors, they do gossip about her. So Asuncion is maybe the poorest in this situation.
Yeah.
Whereas Don Manuel, Evira, they're the only ones that are they're a bit socially above than the others. And the others then would gossip then about Doña Asuncion.
So yeah. And they mentioned Asuncion and
Fernando are the hardest put at the moment.
Yes.
That's very important.
They mentioned that Don Manuel does have a bit of money because he used to work in kind of business kind of work, negocios and that kind of thing. Early on, I really, really like Elvira. What were your early thoughts on her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I must say I really liked her. And even though I've seen this once and read this once before, I still liked her at the beginning. And she seemed like a genuine girl who's in love with Fernando. So it's quite clear from the beginning she's in love with Fernando, who's maybe a few years older than him. And she kind of wants her dad to ask Fernando to work for him. She's hoping that, you know, ideally that Fernando works for him and then they fall in love and have a happy family.
Yeah,
and it seems so, very sweet, actually. She seems
like
a very nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her father's nice, but he's reluctant to quite go as far as she wants, but he still gives the money for the lighting and things. And I think he's a good chap as well, you know?
Yeah, he kind of gives in, but he thinks, he's constantly mentioned Fernando might be a lazy bum. And Fernando is portrayed as in kind of idealist, isn't he? As a dreamer and a thinker, I suppose, as well, but a dreamer. But he doesn't keep a steady job. That's true as well. That is a fact as well. So he does have his reasons for maybe not trusting this guy 100%. He's a bit worried. And what I do forget sometimes when reading this play is that this play was written in the 1940s, but it is set about 30, 35 years before that. So it must be the beginning of 20th century.
Right.
I forget that, actually.
Yeah.
It's only at the end where we're actually in the present moment of that time, 1940s.
That's true. That's right. I forgot that. So we get some immediate gossiping, some of the other characters, you know, Rosa and Trini, and they are gossiping and actually insulting Elvira. And they call her a lagartona. Do you want to translate that word in a polite way?
It's like a big lizard, isn't it? I suppose. Never thought what it meant, actually. Like big lizard, I suppose.
I looked it up. It's essentially they're essentially calling her a prostitute, essentially.
Right. I actually wasn't sure about that. That was just big lizard. But it's not really a word.
I've never seen it used before. I've never seen anyone use that word before.
So yes, especially Paca, who's maybe one of the more important characters, because she is one of the more I could have also guessed that she is the hardest character and also the hardest to die. You'll see later why.
Yeah.
And she insults and she just wants to, she's very interested in gossip, but again she acts as a kind of as a troupe to kind of talk about the characters a bit more and that we learn a bit more about the characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now Doña Asuncion's talking to Fernando about he's working in this paper shop, but it looks like he's kind of slacked off and she's asking why he's in a bad mood. And already we see he is kind of lazy. He hasn't bothered to go into work today. So
Fernando, yes.
Fernando has a friend, Urbano. Now, in the first act, I like both of these guys. And I like their vibe together. They're sneaking out for a cigarette together. They're having a chat. They're giving each other a bit of advice about work and the ladies and just life in general. And I thought, they're a good pair of lads. I like them at the beginning.
They grew up together.
Yeah.
They grew up together. But even though it's clear, though, that they haven't had so many chats, ladies. So their friendship isn't quite what it used to be, even in Act 1. And just so you know, guys, Urbano, so it's a bit of a play in words that he's an urban kind of worker, and he is that kind of worker person. He's talking about syndicates, work rights. This is the very early 20th century right now. And he's kind of like saying they both have aspirations. Fernando, a bit more on the romantic side. And then yes. Urbano says, well, I'm going to work for the people. I'm going to give freedom for everyone, and we're going to revolutionize this. And yeah, so yeah. They're both aspiring clubs.
Fernando is always just kind of saying he's got various projects in the works, but that's it. Like, nothing ever happens. Nothing ever materializes. You know, he has ideas. Yeah, like that, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Fernando. But they talk, you know, to each other. They are friends, as you say. Maybe they haven't been friendly too much lately. I might be skipping ahead slightly, but just to give you an idea of their vibe. One of the things Fernando often says is he'll throw someone down the hole through in of the stairs, yeah. You know. And at one point, Urbano actually says, don't you realize that, you know, you've never done that and you never could do that. Like, that's your idle threat. So that's another thing about Fernando.
Fernando says that to Urbano, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So all throughout the play, guys, what these two talk about, they will repeat what they say, and it will also be said against them. Oh, very often, that's very common. So like a few characters will say, well, you said that. And then again, Act 3, well, you said that 10 and 20 and 30 years ago. So it's the whole play, in fact, has very repetitive themes and issues going on. And it's kind of like no one can ever escape the staircase, doesn't matter what generations have. Just a bit of force. Don't want to spoil anything, yeah. But...
So now enter Urbano's sister, Rosita. Rosa.
He's got two sisters, but first Rosita enters, yes.
Mm-hmm. And she comes in and has a chat with the guys. She's a little bit of a coquette, right?
She likes to flirt.
Does a little bit of flirting, initially, but she argues a little bit with Paca as well. I'm just trying to find the next important point, because there is a lot of dialogue throughout the play, but not all of it is
so Rosita working. She's flirting, but not seriously. She's really in love with Paco, right? Is that his name, Paco? I'm just getting the persona.
Pepe,
Pepe, thank you. So Pepe is, now I got to make this some clear about this. So Pepe and Rosa are in love.
Yes.
Pepe is the older brother of another girl called Carmina. And Fernando is in love with Carmina.
And Carmina's the real problem
The problem is, guys, this is very confusing if you don't have the trans persona. But just to step back a bit, Urbano is also in love with Carmina. That's the issue. But Fernando knows this. It's implied that he knows this. So that this whole conversation about that they talk about it, who they might be in love. Urbano is hoping that it's not Carmina because he's in love with Carmina. But Fernando is in love with Carmina. It becomes obvious. Now, what Carmina thinks is not clear at the moment. We just know that Rosa is with Pepe. That's clear. There's Trini, who's the sister from Rosa and from Urbano.
The other one. Yeah.
Exactly, yes. But she doesn't have any love interest at the moment, I think. So it's a bit confusing, I suppose. But what happens then is basically that Pepe seems to be another kind of man representation. So he's someone who, in Act 1 at least, seems to have a good job and some high aspirations and a bit more conservative. Doesn't he, Dean? He seems more the conservative class, I feel, of man than the other two.
I can't very well remember my early thoughts of Pepe, because I think I hate him by the later acts, and that just totally discolored my, you know, I can't even remember how I felt about him in Act 1, you know.
Well, Urbano just is really violent with Pepe and says, well, if you mess around with my sister because I know who you are and that you're a messer, throw you down the gap between the stairs, right? That's what he keeps saying over and over again. And when that goes down...
Yeah, you're right. Fernando, sorry, I think it's Urbano who says that, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And Fernando is then left at some point by himself. And when Carmina appears, they have a moment for themselves, and Fernando announces that he he still loves her, and that they supposedly they were maybe flirting as children, or like that they were a pair as children before. And he says that he would do anything to be with Carmina. And Carmina says, well, what about, you know, Elvira? What about your girlfriends? Because he's a bit of a Don Juan. Fernando.
If I may just pause you, because you skipped what is, for me, the best moment of the whole play, is when Elvira comes out and she, I imagine her as just this happy little skipping girl with a little ribbon in her hair, you know, and she says, let's go buy a book. Would you like to come with me? I have to buy a gift for someone. And she asks Fernando to accompany her to the bookshop. And he just, like, initially he pretends not to see her, and then he talks to her, and he kind of won't make, you know, eye contact, and he's just kind of like, no, I'm busy, I can't go with you. And I thought he's being really unpleasant to this poor girl who clearly likes him, and just, you know. But then we start to see the bad parts of Elvira as well, because they argue, and they have quite a strong argument, and then it's really only after that that we see him going back and talking with Carmina again.
Yeah, so sorry. So, like, he seems to not reciprocate her affections at all, and is really rude to her. You're right.
Which is a shame.
And then afterwards, this with Carmina happens, where he says that he will work hard, they will have a happy life together, and so and so. And it ends with, act one ends with him leaning over to kiss her and them spilling a bottle of milk, right? So, which Carmina just brought up.
Yeah.
And they're just staring, shocked at the milk, and the curtains fall down. What do you think of Act One, actually? What do you think Vallejo particularly wanted that to happen at the end of Act One?
I wasn't sure why that happens at the end, to be honest. I don't. Do you have a take on that? I just kind of read it and didn't really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't take the Freudian view, which was obviously that he pre-ejaculated, you know. I find it very amusing, these Freudians coming up with those theories. Yeah. It might be.
Well, it isn't. No. Yeah. It's the leche.
Yes.
That means a bit more in Spanish than it does in English, actually.
Yes, that's what I mean. Like, it does seem like the Freudians could argue for that. I'm not just saying that's a joke. But I think it's actually, I don't think Vallejo was going Freudian. I don't think he's intellectual kind of author. Some other more pretentious would do. I think it's just simply milk is hard to clean off. It's not water. So I think the point is that they've just broken something and they won't be able to get rid of this rupture, whatever it is. So it's not quite, I don't think it's as metaphorically, I don't think it's very metaphorical. I just think it's the noise and the fact that they just broke something is already like the bad sign for things to happen.
Basically,
and it does, right? It's not a pleasant thing at all.
No.
Closing lines
of this act, they each ask each other, Fernando and Carmina, about their other girls. So yeah, we know that Fernando's been a bit of a playboy, so she asks him about that. She asks about Elvira, and he actually says, I detest her. And Carmina, who I don't like it, I never liked her. She was the coquette. She was not the nice girl compared with Elvira. Didn't like her first minute.
That's interesting. I disagree. I didn't have anything against Carmina.
I liked Elvira. I thought she was the kind of nice, pure girl. But anyway... So Carmina says, well, I also hate her, you know. So they initially are able to bond on that. And also he says, well, now let me ask you, what about Urbano? And she's like, yeah, she jokes then. She says, oh, he's a great guy. I'm crazy for him. She never actually gives a real answer. But they, you know, as you say, they go in for a kiss or whatever. And they finish the scene where they're together, presumably.
All right, yeah. But it doesn't work out. That's the whole thing. We find out in Act 2 that obviously they're not together. 10 years have passed and someone has died. So there is a funeral taking place. And it is, indeed, it is her, it is Carmina's and Pepe's dad died. Exactly. So we've got, is that right? Yes.
Yeah, it's their dad.
Yes, exactly that. We also find through the gossip that's happening. So, I mean, it's all very good scenes for gossip, isn't it? Staircase, someone, for example, dying at the funeral. So we also find out that a few things have happened. That Doña Asuncion has passed on.
She's gone.
Fernando's mother. As well as Evira's dad, who was seemed to be in very good health.
Yeah.
Don Manuel, who also died, sadly. So that's very important. And just Carmina's dad just died now. So, yeah.
We do have a new character, everyone else. Though. We have Senor Juan.
Yeah, Senor Juan, who is who was there before, just didn't appear. He is Rosa and Trini and Urbano's dad.
Yes.
He is the husband of Paca.
So yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, he's not new as in he's a new arrival. He just doesn't appear in the first act, but he appears now in the second act.
Exactly. So what do you think of scene two? I mean, there is less story, fine, to be...
This is scene one in some sense. This is the quickest of the three scenes, isn't it?
Yes, exactly, yeah. So I just find that it can be summarized... No, I go great, great. But I mean, the whole point of the whole... I find act two is just about what relationships now exist so that nothing turned out the way it was supposed to, right? Yeah. Although Pep and Rosa, as we just mentioned, they flirted heavily in act one, where they are now together, but it's not going well at all. So Pepe from the conservative class is now being a bit of a dandy in extremis.
So he's out just coming drinking home and girls and all this kind of thing, and just coming home to get fed by Rosa. So their relationship is going horribly.
And they live in what used to be Fernando's apartment. So it's also apartments 1, 2, 3, 4 are different, at least two of them. So does the whole play plays around those rooms changing? Mm-hmm. Because now in Fernando's home lives just two people not related to him at all. It's just Rosa is living with Pepe unhappily. Trini is still single, but Fernando is not with Carmina.
No, Fernando is actually with Elvira. Now, initially, I was happy because I thought this is what I wanted. This is my Romeo and Juliet. I wanted them to get together. She's skipping and buying books, but they are not happy.
No, it's immediate. And like it's obvious then that he didn't. It's right from the beginning, right? She's kind of insulting him as well. They're kind of avoiding the neighbors as well. Yeah. They kind of want to avoid the whole funeral procedure.
She's liking her. She becomes a bit of the nagging wife now.
She does, yes, but for good reasons, I find, though. But she becomes immediately bitter. It's only 10 years later, and I find, though, it's a very important time, though, right? So, I mean, Carmina's dad just died, and I don't feel like she's nagging him all the time. I just feel like after 10 years of repressed marriage and he doesn't love her, it's like this is the day, maybe, that she just can't stand it and it's becoming more of an issue than usual. That's what I feel. I think these are important moments of these people's lives in the play, as plays usually are. And anyway, she kind of insults him and insults his mom and everything.
Yes, she does.
And she's kind of indicating, why didn't you, you're a stupid mom and you are always just in love with Carmina and you just married me for money. Ironically, she kind of put this on herself, even though she wasn't aware of it. She did kind of force her dad to establish a better relationship with her. So it's kind of like,
she set this up.
So, ironically, this would never have happened if Fernando wouldn't have been tempted by money, because he did marry her for money, and he didn't keep his promise. That's why the milk spilled. Everything broke. The promise broke. Milk is not, especially in those days, a cheap commodity. It's expensive. So all his dear, expensive wishes, they just were worth nothing right at the end of Act One.
So who does Carmina end up with then? Well, she ends up with Urbano.
Indeed. So, but that happens in Act Two, right? So Urbano immediately finds a moment to say, okay, your dad has died. But I don't find this very nice, though, to be honest. Urbano's kind of pretending to be the savior, and he's saying...
No, I thought, well...
Okay, I get it.
At the time, I thought it was nice. I know that it changes a bit with Act 3, but at the time, I thought he's comforting her, and he's saying, you know, I've always loved you, and this kind of thing, and they get together. Because I was worried. I thought, oh my God, they're all single, and it's been 10 years. Like, this is terrible. Someone's got to get married quickly. We've got to have a love story. So then when he proposes... And she says yes. I thought, like, okay, good, good. All is right with the world.
Well, I think if you're looking for that kind of story, you might be reading the wrong play. I'm just wanting to read her there. If you're looking for your romantic love story,
but they do get together in the end.
They get together. Act two ends with actually kind of a coincidentally Fernando and Evira standing in front of the door, of the deceased person's house were also Urbano and Carmina are now, and they're now a new couple. And the tension, I mean, Vallejo even says in the description for the actors, tension rises, you know. So the tension is high, and, you know, tears and kind of, they're not tears, but it's all kind of still repressed. And but there's a lot of tension, and ends with that, with act two.
But listen, also Urbano keeps saying to her, to Carmina, you know, Carmina, we live together. I'll even bring your mom. Well, you know, I'll support you and your mom. I just want you all to have like,
oh yes,
support and to be happy.
He gives promises very similar to what Fernando gave promises to. And it says again in the actor's acting descriptions, she kind of smiles melancholically because she is reminded by someone else saying this. But so it's even like in the actor's descriptions, like to just, it's just like telling the actress to remember what the actor in scene one said. And oh yeah.
Yeah.
Same story, different person though.
The other bit is, what's going on with Señor Juan and his two daughters? He's not a nice chap, is he?
Señor Juan, look, Señor Juan is worried about Rosita, who was a very violent man together. And he might be worried about his daughter a bit, but he does give Trini, the single daughter, money after Trini kind of says, please, Dad, give me money. So because Rosita is really struggling financially, and he does give her money. So he's
okay. So he calls his daughter like a slut and a whore, says he doesn't ever want to speak to her again. He disowns her. She's no longer part of his family.
Their love interest. When this interesting thing about Story of a Staircase, the language is very vulgar in the sense of vulgar being from the people, just real as well, I suppose.
But
this is quite unusual, I find, for the 1940s Spain, but it does become more of a trend in Spanish plays later.
Yeah, the problem I have is Rosa's gotten with a guy who's turned out to be no good, and who's mistreating her, and you know her life is miserable. So rather than being a support network, her father actually places the moral culpability onto her. Like, as though she should have just known better 10 years ago. Like, what can she, you know, blaming her what is she meant to do now to fix it? Like, why are you blaming her? What do you expect her to do to fix it, you know?
I think you're an interesting point, which will be very clear at the end of Act 3, at the end of the play, which is old generations. You know, you just, it's kind of saying, like, I think Vallejo talks about that these older generations, they can't let go of the past, right?
Yeah,
he really mentions this a lot, and that the younger generation really should let go and shouldn't carry the old past remorses and phrases. He's being very critical of elderly people as well. Which brings us to Act 3, because there's a big theme in Act 3 about vejez, like just being old. Act 3 ends, Act 3 begins 20 years later, right?
Yeah.
And it's essentially the same staircase. I mean, the landowner
prettied up a little bit, painted the walls and
he's tried to pretty up a little bit, but it's not exactly. And Paca enters, the mum, right? The mum from, just to clarify again, Urbano, Trini, and Rosa's mum.
Somehow she's Paca, still alive.
Which I, to be honest, I find a bit predictable, because it's, I thought that was a bit maybe stereotypical, which I find also in kind of 100 years of solitude, this kind of like Spanish mama that lives to be 100. I find that often recurring in Spanish and Latin American literature, which is cool. I love the theme. I feel though it's been milked a bit, to be honest, by a lot of Spanish authors, because I just keep reading this often. I feel like, well, how about having like just a bit of a different character?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, do you agree? You're totally right. We open at three with two well-dressed people, one a little bit younger than the other, and they're just talking very businessy about like what they can do with the apartments, and we want to get rid of these old neighbors, and you know, it's very cool.
Well, after, and to be fair, now the audience has seen Paca, who's the oldest, and maybe like she says, if I can just go back, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I find she has, to be fair, Paca, I find she has maybe the most philosophical question. And she asks, because she's not very philosophical, she's gossiping around, but just at the beginning of Act 3, she's just walking up and saying, oh, I'm so old, and complaining as usual. And then she asks, You know, no me muero ni con polvorones. So I won't die even with, like, you know, guns being shot at me and bombs.
And
now
no one
can. Yes, but that's what I mean. Like, and now that no one listens to me, she says, do I or do I not want to die? Pause. No, I don't want to die. What I want is to chat with Generosa y con Juan, with the people of all the deceased. And yes, and she talks about death. But I find that phrase, to be honest, do I or do I not want to die? It stood out for me. Yo quiero o no quiero morirme. Yo no quiero morirme. And I think that's the reason.
But you're right. We get that opening little monologue from Paca before the well-dressed man and the well-dressed youth talk about, you know, things they could do to improve the place if they got rid of all the old neighbors. Then we get into the scene in earnest when old Fernando and Elvira, who are now, you know, 30 years older than they were at the beginning of the place, they've aged a fair bit. They go to the door, they open their house, and their little son, Manolin, answers, and he's 12. It's his birthday. I hate him immediately. I hate him so much.
Oh, why?
He's horrible.
Oh, dear, that's very cruel. No, the thing is, you know, but he's kind of like a smart Fernando. He immediately just kind of runs off, and he goes to the same place where his dad and Urbano used to smoke. And
he
just smokes as well.
Before that, so they say, like, oh, happy birthday, and he says, where are my cakes? And they say, well, you know, cakes are very expensive, but we will have a surprise for you later. And he's just like, no, I want cakes. It's like, how ungrateful. Your parents are working and struggling for money, you know. And then they're like, well, come inside. And he's just like, no. And he runs off, and he's 12 years old. He's a man now, and he goes to the same little landing where they used to smoke, as you say, and he starts smoking. He's 12 years old. This is highly inappropriate. Yeah.
A bit, but that is that kind of play. It's a slice of life. It's naturalistic.
Well, I don't think I don't know any 12-year-olds who smoke.
You'd be surprised in what goes on in the non kind of Shakespeare world we live in. You know, I think there's a lot of non romantic stuff happening
couldn't
there.
Couldn't they have just said to him, swap out your cigarettes for a copy of La Regenta, and, you know, just
well, it would have made this realistic play into a highly non realistic play, almost a realist play. Yes. You're kind of play, dude. You should write the play. Just you write the play the way you want it, and then you can review it and then love it, and that's it. That's
so
the way to do it.
While he's out smoking, he bumps into old Rosa and Trini, who have now become... So Pepe's essentially gone. He's not dead or anything. He just never comes around. And Trini never got married. So these two women have become two old spinster sisters, essentially.
Yep.
And they say that they, you know, they wish Manolina a happy birthday. And he says, I want to talk to Trini without Rosa being around because she's ugly and grumpy, which is such a horrible thing to say.
He says that.
And then he asks Trini, would you marry me? And she's like, look, I'm actually an old lady. So no, I can't do that.
But she's smitten. I think that scene is actually quite beautiful. I think that's a very...
No, he's not a well-behaved young gentleman. I was shocked.
I think we're deviating now to another podcast, Dean, and the way young man should be
the
nowadays.
Well-behaved young gentleman, episode 3.
Yes.
But also, they now offer him. They now say to him, "Would you like a cake for your birthday?" And he says, "No, I don't like cakes. I like cigarettes." After the moral guilt he just made his poor parents feel for not being able to afford a cake, and now he doesn't even want a cake. What a terrible little boy.
I feel like this is the comedic relief part of this episode right now.
This was horrible to me, you know. I hated
this,
it.
I'm amused that this disgruntled you more than all the violent domestic issues are happening throughout the play, that this kind of small issue is becoming a big thing.
Because he made his, you know, how sad must his parents feel that they can't afford a birthday cake for their child?
I think he makes them feel
sad and says all he wants is the cake, and now he admits to someone else he doesn't even like cake. You know, just, oh, the things I want to
say. You know, your disgruntledness raises an important issue. Why does Vallejo spend so much time of the play in this seemingly just not important scene? I mean, it is not relevant at all for the plot. So I'm just wondering, what's Vallejo's point here? Is he just demonstrating this new generation that there's something sport in them. Because to move on, we do get to know Fernando, the son, and also Carmina, the daughter.
Fernandito,
Yes, but they're adults in the sense of 18 and 21. So Fernando being a bit older.
Yeah, barely. So
I'm wondering, is Manolin supposed to represent the potentially spoiled new generation, but that the generation just before that, they might have more hopes? Because we get to know then that
he's now immediately an ass to his brother, like, oh, I'm gonna tell on you because you're with that girl.
Skipping ahead. So like Fernando and he doesn't realize that Fernando the son doesn't realize that Manolin is in the shadows.
Yes.
And he takes the opportunity because the daughter from Carmina and Urbano, it happens to be coming up, and he takes a chance to tell her that he loves her and that he wants to meet her again. They seem to have been also hanging out before that.
They have now become a copy of their respective parents, right? Of Fernando and Carmina.
Exactly. And Fernando, the son, seems to be a bit more naive, similar to his dad at that point. And I'm just looking through the book. And Carmina does seem to feel that it's a bit more impossible for a reason she can't explain.
Well, I prefer Fernando here because he just wants to pursue love, and I like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Fernando is maybe the bravest character, you know. And
yeah.
Carmina too later on, I think, but just Fernando there, I love this character.
But sorry for skipping ahead, but we'll just get it out of the way because Manolin stops really being important after this. But he's going to tell his brother and everything, and I'm just a terrible little boy.
So are you finished with your rant about you?
He's a sharp strike with the back of the hand.
So guys, literally probably the most insignificant character, you know, one of the most insignificant characters in the play, but Dean wants to spend a lot of time on him. I get it. So what happens here is now you see now I don't know where we are. Oh yeah. So anyway, Carmina can't be with Fernando, and Fernando keeps pushing, and Carmina, the daughter, eventually admits, "Look, I can't. My parents really have something against your parents. They threatened me. They even hit
me." They hit me. Yeah.
And he's quite shocked. I was shocked at that point. I wasn't thinking that domestic violence would really issue between kids and parents. I didn't think it would go that far. But I suppose back in the 1940s, Spain, Franco just being freshly in power, really violent time. So it's probably even more violent 1940s than 1920s, I would say, in Spain. That's my little rant about Franco.
But look, go ahead.
And just wanted to mention, when you do read Spanish plays, even if this hasn't been translated, just keep in mind Franco is the main antagonist in all plays. He's the antagonist, even if he's not there, he's between the lines. Just remember that. In general, plays written during the dictatorship. If you read Master Margarita by Bulgakov, Stalin's very present between those lines. So I just want to mention the suppression from the parents mirrors the suppression from Franco, which is recently in power, suppressing more open-minded people. I think one can forget that this is ultimately also a very political play, and Vallejo was also in prison as well. I think he even wrote this in prison, Dean. I want to verify that. But he did write in prison. I think that was one of the plays. I think it's one of his first plays, or if not the first play. And so, going against Franco, being in prison, he's obviously talking about this old generation that has ultimately
I want to give some moral advice here. So I like that Fernando... because the parents, we discover in a moment that both sets of parents are against them getting together, right?
Yeah, sure. That's it, basically.
Fernandito is basically saying, well, I love you. I want to be with you. I've got some projects, just like his dad had. And he's a dreamer. And that's what we need in the world. She is kind of like, well, I'm a bit scared. My parents have told me not to, so I better do what I'm told. And she's willing to give up on love, which I think is a terrible thing. And I don't.
Yeah, well, it's probably similar
character,
I don't know if it's not. I think it's a strong card. I just don't think I just think it's a realistic place. It just symbolizes what probably most even progressive women still thought that they probably can't do it in Franco's time.
I don't want to seem a hypocrite, so I want to make this very, very clear. Obey your parents with regards to smoking cigarettes and coming into the house. Do not obey them when they tell you to give up on love. Okay, that's where the line is drawn. Okay.
That's some solid advice, team, giving those free kids. I think we can extract that, just that advice, and also give that to the kids. I love it. So yes, the parents are against it. It escalates in the play in the fact that for a few reasons,
the parents almost get violent with each other at one point.
The parents do just happen to be at the same time in a staircase. A few different reasons why, I won't get into that. They sort of escalate. It's been a tense day because really the kids, they want to be together. It starts off with Fernando, the small one, small Fernando, rebelling against his dad and then making a bit of a scene. And then it goes on with the mom being really upset. The mom is more upset because she's jealous of Vera, that there is a small Carmina, and it's being, history repeats itself. And then Carmina's mom, Carmina Sr., comes out and also shouts, and Urbano. And then the parents get violent. The other characters all come out that are in the building. Not the new tenants that are kind of the posh ones. I mean, our tenants from the story. And everyone's kind of fighting against each other, right? And what's important here is that it's never quite revealed what happened, so the kids don't know it. But when everyone leaves, Fernando and Rosita, they meet up again. Carmina, they meet up. And Carmina says, well, look, you see that it can't be. Ya ves que no puede ser. You see, it can't be. And then Fernando, the son, says, sí puede ser. No te dejas vencer por su sordidez. Don't let yourself be convinced or beaten up by their stubbornness, by their deafness, actually, is what he's saying. So that they're deaf. They're just, they're just old. They don't understand, but I will fight to beat this. I will fight for you and for me. Mm-hmm. In a sense, and this is the way it ends, isn't it, Dean? Like, that they're kind of like promising the same thing. And very pointedly, I find the ending is beautiful, right?
The ending is very, very good. Just before you get to the ending, allow me one sentence, because I just want to say, with these parents coming out and arguing things, it's interesting because it just brings to the fore that the couples were mismatched to begin with. It should have always been, Fernando with Carmina, it wasn't. And neither of the two couples love each other, so they've got paranoia and jealousy and bitterness the whole way through, and suspicion.
That's beautifully put, yeah. And I was just going to mention that.
And then on to this final point, which is the, if you want to go ahead and tell us the ending.
Oh, yeah, that's my thing, yeah. So they look at each other with ecstasy, Fernando and Carmina, which doesn't mean the same thing in Spanish. They just look at each other with great joy. And they're very close to kissing. And then what happens is that Fernando, the father who had left he was really depressing, he left the building, he's just coming back. And the mother, Carmina, is also just opening the door and looking what's going on. And they see this, their young versions, basically their young kids with the same names, really like talking about this and talking that they want to get away. They want to get from the building, they want to get from the tradition, they want to get from the repetitiveness. And they see each other basically reflected. Yeah. And they look at the couple, then they look at each other, which they don't do. So this is the first time again in Act 2 and 3 that ever Fernando Sr. and Carmina Sr. like they share a moment or even a look. And then they look at the couple again, and then they look at each other for a very long time, and that their looks are filled with melancholy, but that they don't want to spoil the
little bit of the misery cordia there. Child. Yeah. And they go. So this is the thing. Their partners both were super, super against this idea. They now see them together defying the rules, and they just kind of have this melancholic moment where they eventually kind of sigh and walk on, and they don't spoil it. And they see themselves, they see history repeating,
Yeah, and it could be just history repeating and same things will happen again. But I personally think that the ending is open. So does history repeat itself? But I think they have learned their lesson that anything don't interfere with use. And that's what happened before. Mm-hmm. The dad was good intent, was interfering, say, here, Fernando, you have the job. Avira was interfering, said, I kind of want to be with him. Just let love be, and generation knows better.
There's a generational point here. There is a generational point, but Don Manuel, for example, was a good father, and I think that their parents were better than they are. I think they are the ones that are very controlling and not letting their kids hang out with the people they want to hang out with and not letting them date who they want to date. I think they're worse parents than their parents were.
Yeah, no. And this comes back to what I said. Franco is times more conservative. There were more conservative times than 1920s, or I would say perhaps maybe the late 1890s. You know, it's not like it was always conservative and slowly getting progressive. There were waves. And Franco times is a big like fallback in like strictness.
It's also,
I think that's what he's saying as well.
Interesting to see the youth, because they don't want to really respect the elderly, you know, they want to do their own thing. Paca is the antithesis of that, but there's a funny moment where one of the young girls kind of says, oh, this railing's falling apart, just get a new one. And one of the older guys is kind of like, we can't just replace these old things, we need to have respect for Paca, them, you know. Yeah, and
well, that's what I mean. Paca represents that she's the only old generation left. But she kind of doesn't take it seriously, but she does go to her grandmother and shows her some love, but then she immediately also does the same thing again when the grandmother's finished. You know, it's kind of like saying, like, these young ones, they should break. That's why I get Vallejo say, I think Vallejo wants the young generation to break that bloody staircase. Excuse me for cursing. You can also bleep that part out. But you know what I mean? They want to, that staircase. And it should. That staircase has to go. The staircase is the antagonist, really.
Yeah,
well, at the same time, maybe not. Maybe the staircase is a friend who's trying to
help. I think their whole world is the antagonist. You're right. Like, they want to escape, but I don't think they do. Like, maybe it's sad of me, and I'm the dreamer, but I think that these two kids grew up and die in the same apartment that their parents did.
All right. Okay. Well, look, it's open to interpretation. And Vallejo starts off with that not very nice quote, I think. Very Hobbesian view of wolf eating wolf. Man is wolf to man. He starts off with that thing, but I wonder at the end, is there hope in Vallejo? And I'd love to read more plays of his. You've read Foundation. You guys can tell us what you think is the ending. But I think it's an open ending, and I think there is hope for humanity. There should be hope. I mean, this is written in 1949. To be fair, he didn't know that Franco was going to live that long, that this conservative Spain was going to last so long, you know. No one knew that. It's like the East Berlin Wall. They didn't know it was going to end. You just don't know that. In hindsight, you can say, okay, it was a bit premature to expect that things would change in 1949 or 1950. But I think it's got that open ending. And the fact, there are a few reasons why I think this. It's first of all, it is the daughter, the way she behaves by wanting to break the staircase. And it is, I think that's the main reason. It's also the fact that Fernando observes the story from an outside perspective. He observes that these parents are stuck in a loop, whereas the original Fernando never saw the loop. I mean, he didn't see the loop. So I think there's perspective, and there's also willingness to really break things. And sometimes to break things is good. I think there's hope. So I think this is a contrasted beginning. Very negative. I think it's got a positive ending. But it's very open to interpretation.
I just kind of thought we're going in circles. But, you know, you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's...
No. And I think it's... That's why it's a great ending. It's really, you can't tell. You can really pinpoint down the way he says it. He says they're an illusions group. That they're an illuded and erroneous group of kids. So there, if you nitpoint at the vocab, sometimes it seems to suggest more the loop theory of Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think the actions of Act 3 depict more kind of courageous ending.
Okay. Well, look.
Anyway,
final thoughts is I don't think it's as good as The Foundation, but I think it's a good play. He is an amazing playwright, and I also would like to read some more of his at some point. Although for now, we're gonna get stuck into some Greek plays first.
Oh yeah, Oh, yeah, we're going to go Greek, guys. All right, so we've gone on about this a long time. I think it's a long episode, but it's just a great play. Really delight watching it, and I hope it becomes... I hope it's not just produced in Japan, but everywhere. It's just check it out if you can, or check out any of his plays. Antonio Buero Vallejo.
All right.
Historia de una escalera.
That's it. Have a nice day. It's not a Shakespearean day. I don't know what to...
Look, have a Vejohonian day, I suppose, right? Have a Vejohonian day. There, or maybe not. I don't think that's the best kind of day.
I think they don't want it. Yeah. Just
don't break staircases. That's the
Don't spend your whole life on a staircase. Okay, that's us. Ciao.
See you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.